Ready? Like to welcome everybody to the July meeting of the Upper Trinity Groundwater Conservation District Board of Directors. We're meeting here in our offices in Springtown, as well as on Zoom. If you're attending on Zoom and wish to speak on any item on the agenda, if you would hit the chat function and let Doug know, so when we get to that item, we can then get around to you. Director Nave, would you call roll, please, sir?
Yes, sir. Justin Bradley.
Here.
Jared Reynolds. Absent. Bob Lusky. Absent. Shannon Nave is here. Tracy Messler.
Here.
Mike Berkeley.
Here.
Don Micah.
Here.
Jason Flint.
Absent. We do have a quorum. Please stand and join me in the pledge of the flags. I pledge allegiance to the flags of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. I honor the Texas flag. I pledge allegiance to thee, Texas, one state, under God, one and indivisible. Lena, did we have any sign up for public comment?
Good evening.
Jenny. What do you want me to do about it?
We're going to kill him.
Good. Scorpion.
Oh, we're infested with scorpions.
Okay.
They don't eat much.
Can we allocate some money for exterminators?
We have one. They come. And we still have lots of scorpions.
Set public comment and consider the proposed desired future conditions to the groundwater resources Trinity Aquifer Group within the district pursuant to Section 36.108(d)(2) of the Texas Water Code. But the proposed desired future conditions for the district are based on the total average feet of drawdown over the course of the planning period through 2080 and are as follows. District-wide, average aquifer drawdown through 2080 of in the feet by aquifer layer, 47 feet in the outcrop of the antlers, 154 feet in the down drip dip of the antlers, 6 in the outcrop of the Paluxy, 2 in the down dip of the Paluxy.
Tracy, I think that's the old one. I'm sorry.
Beg your pardon?
I apologize. I don't think this got updated.
Yeah, I think we're going, are we not going to percentages or?
Right, we are.
Yeah.
That's just on the, yeah, I apologize.
I'll let you read the caption for this one.
Right. Sorry about that. Let me find the right one.
I printed that out this morning.
No, you did. It's all good. That was from something else. Yep. Yep.
When you've signed this.
I will move forward. It is that it's fine. So would you like me to move forward?
I will let you go forward with it.
Okay, sorry. So every year, every 5 years, we're required to adopt DFCs. As those of you on the board know, the public may or may not. A DFC is a desired future condition. It's a physical characteristic of the aquifer at some point in the future. You know, we do this for GMA-8 and GMA-6. GMA-8, we cover most of the Trinity Aquifer. GMA-6 covers the Cross Timbers Aquifer on the west side of the district. So each of those years we go through, we do a bunch of model runs. We select a situation that where it's, I guess, not necessarily the desired future condition, but it's the do not cross line. This is what we want the aquifer to look like in 50 years. The model runs that we selected for the proposed DFCs for our district are based on current pumping with basically looked at historic growth, carried that forward to 2040, and then it's held constant at 2040. So right now, each GMA is required to adopt proposed DFCs by this past May. That was done in March and early April. The two GMAs both adopted proposed DFCs. We did, at that point in time, it began a 90-day public comment period, which we're in right now. During the public comment period, each district's required to hold a hearing on the proposed DFCs, and then Once we hold the hearing on the proposed DFCs, we submit public comments received back to the GMA. So that's kind of where we are right now. So I'm going to go through for GMA 8. This is the Trinity Group of Aquifers. So the majority of Parker, Wise, and Hood County, with the exception of maybe just the western portion of it, and maybe the eastern 40% of Montague, not a little bit more than a third, but less than half. So what you're looking at here is what we're proposing. The top table is for the Trinity Group of Aquifers, which is made up of the Paluxy, the Glenrose, the Hensel-Hosten, and Twin Mountains, or the Hensel-Pearsall and Hosten. The Hensel and Hosten in our district are lumped together in the Twin Mountains. The Twin Mountains is what everybody calls the Trinity. People say Paluxy Trinity here. The Twin Mountains is what they're talking about when they say the Trinity. So what this means is moving forward, in the Paluxy, for example, district-wide, we want to see at least 92% of current available drawdown. So current water in the well, we want to see 92% of that remaining at the end of 50 years. The Glenrose, 88%. The Twin Mountains, 82%. And the Antlers is a conglomeration of all those formations in the northern part of the district where the Glenrose does not act as a regional aquitard. So we're looking at least 86% of water levels remaining by 2080. When you break those same numbers out, the same model run, you just slice that pie up a little bit differently. You end up with, you break it out by county. So Parker County is the only county where we really have Paluxy. So it's 92%. The Glenrose, 95% remaining in Hood, 87% in Parker. Twin Mountains, 84% in Hood, 88% in Parker. And then the Antlers, all of those combined together to form the Antlers in Wise and Montague County and part of northern part of Parker County. So you're looking at 91% remaining in Montague, 86% remaining in Parker, and 84% remaining in Wise County. There is the Cross Timbers is the older formation. It's Paleozoic in age versus the Trinity group being Cretaceous in age. So it dips below the Trinity. So where the Cross Timbers exist below the Trinity in the boundaries of GMA 8, we are proposing to have at least 94% of water levels remaining in 2080 for the Cross Timbers. Very, very, very little use out of the Cross Timbers below the Trinity. So for GMA 6, which is the west side of the district, so, you know, the western two-thirds of Montague County, the western little slice, maybe western 10% or so of Wise and Parker County, we are just putting all the groups of the Cross Timbers together, and we want to see no less than 85% of available drawdown remaining at the end of at 2080.
Again, of current.
Current, yes. Yeah. So, for example, real quick, if I may. For example, just for the people in the audience, that means if you have 100 foot of water in your well right now, we want to see at least 85 feet left at 85%, if that makes sense.
It does, but we don't go back to 2020, 2010, 2000 to be able to say we want to have a certain percentage of
what was then. I apologize. It is from 2020 water levels because that's when the model is calibrated.
But we're not going, you know.
Right.
We've been pulling water out of the ground for 150
right.
years.
Right.
And what we're not doing is going back and saying,
correct,
this is what it looked like back then.
Correct.
We're going, we've already depleted it a lot, and we're only hoping to deplete it this much more.
Correct. That is correct. Because we've seen a lot more reduction than that in the past, right? We're just trying to kind of cut that off. But
when was the first GMA for Region 8?
2010, so 16, 15, 26, 16, 11. 2011 would have been the first ones adopted,
I think.
Would have
been calibrated for what period?
I think those were 2000, and then we updated the model. Those were calibrated at 2010, and now the model, the baseline, is calibrated to 2020.
Is this anything you can provide me information for the Paluxy and the Twin Mountains for that original model, what were the depths we had to where we're going to go for 2080?
Sure. Yeah.
It's going to be a lot less than 85%.
Right. It is. Yeah. Yep. So there's, and I apologize for putting the wrong stuff on here. But my recommendations, we don't really need action other than if you just want to authorize me to submit any public comments we get. And we hadn't received any to my knowledge at this point.
Do we have anybody who wishes to make public comment on the DFC projections? You have anybody online, Doug?
No, sir.
Do we have a public hearing?
This is the public hearing.
This is the public meeting required?
Yes. But they have a 90-day period to make a comment in writing to us. And I was going to have the board instruct the staff to compile any comments they receive and include them in the report back to GMA 8 and GMA 6. That meet what we need?
Yes, sir.
Any board members have anything else on this item?
When are we meeting about this again, Doug?
Where is this at?
The DFC.
The district. So we meet every, so we will finish. So once we get proposed DFCs, they're done. Once the 90-day comment period closes, we submit all the districts will submit the comments to the GMA. They'll package all that up, submit, and then the GMA will take action to formally adopt the proposed DFCs. We'll do that probably December, January, probably December, November, December, actually. It's got to be done by January. They'll submit an explanatory report. So it's a big document that explains here are all the things we considered. Here's all the modeling we did. We'll send that to the Water Development Board. Once they review that, they'll send it back to us. Then the board will have to take action to formally adopt these DFCs. Then we'll have to amend our management plan to get the new DFCs in the management plan. All while that's happening, the GMA then immediately starts the next round of planning. So it's an every 5-year process, right? So it's both things are kind of happening simultaneously.
Okay.
Yeah.
What actions do we have left on this?
There's really nothing else.
There's nothing really other if y'all just want to formally authorize me to submit public comments we receive.
I hear that as a motion.
I make that motion.
Motion, Director Nave, second by Director Micah to instruct the staff to prepare any public comments and submit them to the GMAs.
That was my comment. That was my motion.
That was your motion.
Yeah.
Any further discussion? All in favor say aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. And show the public hearing closed at 5:14. Now another public hearing. Receive any public comments, requests, contests, and general manager's report and recommendations regarding the following applications for permits, permit amendments, and a request for exceptions to the district's water well spacing or minimum track size requirements. 1A, applicant owner is Turner Company out of Rome. Continued from the hearing in June. System ID 210W, requested permit volume 9,800,000 gallons. Doug?
Yes, sir. So Turner Co., remember we held this initial hearing, I don't know, was it 2 months ago? Was it last month? Yeah, and then we'd asked for more information and they didn't get it to us. So concrete facility, they produce concrete products. They're in Rome, southeast Wise County. They're looking to drill one more well. They have one existing well on site. Their existing wells, if you can kind of see this in the map, is right up here. They're looking to drill one more well. The first well's, 10, 15-gallon a minute well. They're looking to add another 17-gallon a minute well, which brings the system capacity above 17 gallons a minute for a commercial system. That means it's non-exempt, has to get a permit. So that's why we're having this hearing. The proposed well for 17-gallon a minute well, you know, it's got to be 150 foot from another well, 50 foot from property line. So it meets all of our spacing requirements. So that's good. Regarding the permit volume, they could receive a permit up to 19 million, just over 19.75 million gallons per year. And that's based on the fact they own almost 72 acres. Aquifer is 681 foot thick. They're only proposing to drill to 550 feet. So that comes out to the 19.75 million gallons they could be allocated on an annual basis. They requested 9.8 million gallons. That was based on 250 yards of concrete a day, using 15 gallons per yard. That's 100 employees using 15 gallons per day, plus filling a 2,000 gallon truck 7 times a day for dust suppression, doing that for 6 days a week. That all comes out to 6 million gallons. Of course, they requested 8 million. Their justification was 6 million. My recommendation is approval of the permit in the amount of 6 million gallons per year. And I'm happy to answer any questions.
Doug, is there any potable water or public water adjacent to this site?
I don't believe there is. Is there?
Texas system to the.
But yeah, they don't provide there. There's an. Yeah. So
they don't have Walnut Creek.
No.
Let me see their site plan again.
Is that what you're looking at?
They on those two really large roofs.
All right, it's a lot of opportunity to catch rainwater. Yeah. They're fairly new structures too, aren't they? Yeah.
There's no variances they're requested. That's a shame.
With the amount of growth going in there, would it make any difference in terms of that?
No.
They've got the acreage for the allotment.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering if they're going to come back and request more.
They do, they do.
They do, but they're going to cap out at some point.
Right.
You think they'll ever sell any of that acreage off? That's a lot of acres.
It is. And if they do, then we'll have to, you know, adjust their permit accordingly if they do.
Assuming we move forward with approval of this, and staff talk to them about the possibility of their own personal rainwater harvesting.
I don't think that got brought up to them. We mentioned it to them, though.
Look at, or they need to look at using that for production, but for dust control, other
things. It'd be a lot better than using groundwater for dust control.
It's something they can do at a relatively low cost. It's something they can show, you know, concrete plants aren't always everyone's favorite, but anything they can do for PR as well as the community,
right,
would be helpful. And if they had a rainwater harvesting tank, they could have an FDC on it for Fire Connect. There's a lot of community benefit,
right,
when they have such a large roof,
right,
available to them.
No, you're exactly right. They can fill up a big old tank pretty quick.
Again, and you know, they may find that there's some production water that they could utilize in,
mm-hmm,
or potable water for their staff.
Yep. Yep. No, we'll bring that up to them.
Make a motion to approve the operating permit for system 210 WOP in the amount of 6 million and 6,000 gallons per year.
Do I hear a second? Second by Director Berkeley. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. 1B, owner applicant Texas Land Holdings LLC out of Naples, Florida, operating permit amendment, system ID 103-M, requesting volume of 485,665 gallons. Doug?
Yes, sir. This is a development subdivision in Montague County. They currently have a permit for common area irrigation from several wells. They've also got a day barn on the back of the property. So I think that the goal, their idea behind this development is they're all 2 acre lots. They assume, it's built with trails and it's built for folks with horses, right? So they're putting in a day barn, but because it's public and it's part of the system, you know, that's going to be commercial use. So they're adding one more well because currently they already have a system. They have a permit for common area irrigation. They're looking to add one more well back there by the day barn, for bathrooms and any kind of watering that's necessary, while people are using that facility. In terms of their, spacing, it meets all spacing requirements. Just a 10 gallon a minute well. Of course, they operate a few others. But it meets the 50 foot from property line and 150 foot from other wells. As far as the demand or the permit volume, they've got just over 43 acres, aquifer thickness 200 feet. They're only drilling 134, comes out to about 2.885 million gallons per, well, take that back, 217,000 gallons left. So they currently have a permit for 2.6 million gallons. They could get 2.8. They've got a permit for 2.6. So you subtract that off. So they've got 217,000 gallons left that they could be permitted. They've asked for 485,665 gallons per year. With this justification, talking about the number of folks they at their that would build houses there, that would likely have horses, how much that use. Basically, they're saying 80% of the households and subdivisions will have a horse and about 5 gallons per day. However, that's this 485,000 is more than we can allocate to them based on how we allocate. So my recommendation is approval of permit for 217,630 gallons per year. Yes, happy to.
We know how big the day barn is proposed to be. Rough numbers.
Like 3 stalls, so not very big. Yeah. No, we can find a square footage, but I don't think they've told us.
Small.
Yeah, it's pretty small.
Smaller than this building.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No, it's just, it's not to keep the horses. It's just rest them or get them ready well before the trail rides or something like that.
The 43 acres they have,
that's outside of the development, right? So
there's no wells on that other than a public water supply system.
No, there's not a public water supply. They have private wells. But that's not on this 43 acres, right? This is separate from that.
43 acres is the common ground.
It's yes. It's where the barn's going to be. It's where the trails are going to be and the roads. Yeah, that's correct. So there's a common area. There's the common area where the barn is and then the adjacent roads that the developer and HOA will maintain. All this will eventually be transferred to the HOA. And so the roads are part of the acreage that they own. So this tract. Yeah, this is just 11. This is just where the barn is. There's more tracks around it.
But they're going to be, are they 2 acre track?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, all the homes are 2 acre tracks. Yes, sir.
Annabelle, does a horse drink 5 gallons a day? Don't they drink a lot more?
No, this is Mike. This is just while they're at this facility.
Oh, okay.
No, the assumption is these people are going to be keeping their horses on their 2 acre lots. They're going to be providing water that's from their exempt wells. This is just, they have trails there. People saddle their horses up, go ride the trails. They may need some water while they're riding trails.
Good drink.
Yeah, horses are going to drink more than five gallons a day.
Okay.
Yeah, this is just while they're at the facility. That's the assumption.
They have an operating permit right now.
Yes, sir.
And it's 2.6 million.
Yep.
And there's only a little bit left. What is the 2.6 being used for?
Common area irrigation. And a little pond they're filling.
Vanity?
Yep.
Vanity?
Yeah.
Okay. Is there any
other curse word?
Is there any other public buildings they have?
No.
Or just this day barn?
Just this.
Okay.
Just the day barn.
For the general manager's recommendations, board have any more questions? Chair to entertain a motion to approve the general manager's recommendation of 217,600 gallons a year. Chair will make the motion. Do I hear a second?
I second it.
Second by Justin. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. Item 1C, Kelly Ranch Estates, LLC out of Weatherford. Operating permit amendment, system ID 211P. Doug, I'll let you go involved in this.
Yeah, so actually my recommendations changed a little bit. I have on my recommendation here that we just deny it. So background, the first time we held a hearing on this was 2 months ago. We tabled it until this month because they didn't have a location for the replacement well. They're not asking for any additional volume. They're looking to drill a replacement well. They didn't have a location that would work. And then right before that last hearing, we also found out that they had some wells that were in violation of district rules. Basically, the developer put all these wells in their name and had failed to transfer them over to the MUD yet. Then they started selling lots, and now their public water supply wells that are still in the developer's name were too close to property lines. We basically told them a while back, you need to fix this. The way to fix it is going to transfer everything to the MUD. That way we look at the MUD's boundary as the property line. They had not done that when I put this out and sent it out. They still had not, we hadn't heard anything from them. So I was going to recommend just deny it. We got the transfers today for all the wells, the permit and everything is being transferred to the MUD. So that'll address the violations, but they still don't have a location for an acceptable location for this one. So my recommendation is to table this or continue this at next month's meeting. What is that, October, August 20?
I make a motion to accept your recommendation since they don't have their ducks in a row.
Yeah. So continue to August 20th.
I believe I can just continue it, can I not?
I believe so.
August?
August 20th.
I'll continue this.
Any discussion before we do that?
You can have some discussion. Yes, sir. All right.
Doug?
Sorry, Kyle was asking me a question.
We'll let it slide this. You would not be in favor of the board giving you discretion to approve this once they get their ducks in a row. You would rather them come back and have another and have an open hearing.
If the board would like me to authorize me to approve a location of the replacement well and approve the replacement well when it's once they have all their ducks in a row, that's fine.
They're not asking for any more water.
No.
They have all their other items taken care of. They've transferred things that we've asked them to transfer to get in compliance with the board rules.
Right.
And right now they have a well they need to move somewhere else. It's been going on for a few months, mostly their own fault.
Right.
And we can either give you authorization that once they have something that's acceptable and meets the board rule or the district's rules,
mm-hmm.
that you can authorize that well, or we can wait till next month,
right.
have a full hearing on that or a full discussion about it,
right.
and we can move forward.
Right.
Do you have any concern about that?
No, I don't.
Is that a formal motion?
The only question I have is you've got a lot of wells in this property. Do we make sure that they don't go over their allotment?
I think they're closing one well and moving it to
another. They're having to replace a well now.
Well, I understand that, but the point is they haven't been registered. They haven't done everything. The point is there's a lot of wells. There's a lot of water being taken. I don't care if they had to close one well. That one well that they're closing may use minimum amount of water, and all of a sudden they get a well that.
Well, they're capped production-wise anyway.
No. I just want to make sure they don't go over their allotment.
But I think, you know, there's two
items. That'll go with the agreement with him.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I think.
Well, he's going to make sure that he complies with our rules and stuff.
Right, right.
That's the point I want to make sure, yeah. is that.
Well, I think we would, all, you know, if it's something where the wells, where they're proposing to put a well wouldn't meet spacing requirements, that would have to come back to us. If it's
So it's a replacement well.
Yeah.
So that it's not subject to spacing.
Well, I guess the motion would make is we'd authorize you to approve it, assuming it doesn't contradict any spacing requirements. And if it
well, then it's going to require a hearing.
Then it has to come back.
And it come back because it still doesn't require an exception because it is a replacement well, and our only requirements for replacement wells are be placed within 50 feet of the existing well. The existing well predated the district, and it does not meet spacing requirements.
Okay.
So it won't – they're not going to be able to put
– they can meet both of those requirements.
No, it's impossible. It's physically impossible.
Okay.
Yeah. Because it's a large well. As I said, the original was drilled predates the district.
But at this point
– they want to drill it right, you know, within 50 feet or within 100. We can't approve, but it's not going to be far enough away from the property line regardless. So it would either –
It sounds like you're leaning towards let's come back next month and see where it is.
It's up to you guys. I mean, it's going to be a situation. I mean, it's going to be the same situation, whether it's y'all or me approving it. You know, it's just going to be a replacement well. It'll have to meet the replacement well requirements, but it's up to you guys. I am indifferent as to how y'all want to handle it.
Continue it.
I think so.
Let's continue this the next month.
Okay.
That concludes public hearings at 5:31. Regular board meeting. Item one, consent agenda. Consent agenda is composed of routine and non-controversial items. Any board member can pull an item off the consent agenda to be considered separately. This month's consent agenda includes approval of the minutes from the hearings and regular board meeting of June 11, approval of bank statement ending June 30th and other financial reports of the district, payment of bills and invoices received through July 16th, reimbursements for expenses incurred on behalf of the district through July 16th, and approval of request for extension applications submitted through July 16th. Do we need to pull anything?
No, I've got some extensions to add.
You got some extensions to add? Would you read those on the record, please?
Yeah. We need to add a fourth extension for well ID 22515, a second extension for well ID 23463, a second extension for well ID 23427. And then for the non-exempt, they're all second extensions, well IDs 22157, 22158, 22159, 22388, 22389, and 22749. She was trying to write them down. I have them. So ready. Thought it'd save her.
I make a motion. We approve the
consent agenda
with the addendums.
Do I hear a second? Second by Director Berkeley. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Item two is moved. Item three, board consideration and possible approval of quarter investment report with recommendations. Doug?
Yes, sir. Got the investment report in front of you. No real recommendations. I've got some CDs coming up in the next few months. Looks like two in October, two in September, one at the end of the year. Just like always, we'll look at rates to renew those. If the rates are lower than our ICS account, we'll just move the funds to the ICS account. That's it. And my recommendation is approval.
Is there any need to, if any's coming out, that we need to get the interest for any reason?
No. No, most of the CDs are set up to where the interest rolls into, is either sent to us by a check, just to keep all the CDs under the FDIC limit.
Any other questions, General Manager? Board entertain a motion to approve the quarterly investment report.
So move.
Motion by Director Nag. Do I hear a second?
I'll second it.
Justin got in first, Don. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Item four, discuss and consider action authorizing General Manager to enter into one or more agreements with JT Hill, PLLC, to provide legal services to the district, including in situations where the general manager and the board need to retain separate legal counsel or to assist with the provision of legal services from the district's general counsel, and authorize the general manager to approve the retention of JTLPLLC for additional legal or technical consulting or testifying experts and professionals to provide assistance in legal representation. Doug?
Yeah, so we've talked a little bit over the last while about the likelihood of the district ending up with a contested case in the future. As you know, we talked about that a good bit, right? There's some potentially contentious permits coming up. One of them we have in house, it's not even administratively complete. We've already received several requests to contest. If we end up in a contested case, we will need to secure separate legal counsel for me as a separate party to the case. Brian would obviously represent the district, the board, and then I would need legal representation. Brian had recommended Jason Hill, JT Hill. Tracy, you and Mike may remember Jason. He used to be with Lloyd Goslink several years ago, helped early on in the years of the district. He's since gone out on his own. I met with him a while back. He's happy to do this. So I just need a motion, if y'all see fit, to authorize, enter into agreements with JT Hill for those purposes. Mike, you look like you have a question.
Yeah, I do.
You're talking about litigation in a district court.
No, we're talking about a contested case before SOA.
Yeah, but,
oh, yeah, yeah.
But the big problem is once it's appealed,
right.
Once it moves up the system, you end
right.
up in district court.
Right.
Is this guy a trial attorney?
Brian could probably speak to Jason's experience more than I can. Brian?
Yeah, that's why we recommended him. He's a very good groundwater litigator. Good with SOA, good with litigation appeals of agency decisions, groundwater district decisions. He's who I would hire if it were my money. And y'all recall that he represented the district in the Finco matter up in Montague County way back in the day, okay, with the Finolios.
Yeah.
He handled that. Anybody, anything else? I remember working with Jason too.
Yeah, I remember. I don't remember the Finolio.
Finco, I'll remind you later. But we did wind up in a litigation and appeal at the state level, and Jason handled that for us.
We have to amend the budget?
No, not at this time. No,
this is just simply getting this in place when it's needed.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Because once we get a contested case hearing, he's going to have separate legal counsel, and we're going to have separate.
What the purpose of?
So that just brings.
It's just getting all our ducks in a row before that happens, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. There is no financial at this point, as I understand it.
That's what.
If we don't need him, we won't use him. But if we do need him, then we got to have.
Not worried about it. I just want to know if there was any additional upfront. No.
Do we? How big is the firm? Is it a? I remember Jason. I don't remember the specifics. Is it a small one man firm? Is it a mid sized firm? Brian, I assume you know the answers.
His law practice he's a solo practitioner, but he's also of counsel with the Allensworth firm in Austin, which is a fairly large, mostly construction litigation firm. And when he needs to bring in assistance for trial and paralegals, he brings in the Allensworth litigators and paralegals as contract attorneys to work with him. And he has an office there, so he's kind of got the best of both worlds.
So basically, we're hiring him as a point man. If it's in litigation in a district court, he will bring in then another law firm who's got the appropriate size staff. Is that correct?
He may if he needs to. Once it's in district court, we don't need separate counsel anymore. He can also work with our litigators and our team at our office. I mean, we would both be representing the district if something went up on appeal.
Right.
So, but this will just give Doug flexibility to deal with that.
Yeah. Yeah. This is largely for SOA hearings.
Okay.
Make a motion to follow the GM's recommendation.
That motion, Director Knave, to hear a second. I'll second it. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Discussion and possible action regarding hydrogeologic evaluations, a practical guide to groundwater investigations and resource assessment in Texas, written by district staff, including but not limited to authorizing the general manager to release the report for formal review and publication. Doug?
Yeah, just real quick, and then I'm going to turn it over to Jill. As you know, we've been reviewing groundwater certifications for 2.5 years now. Found a lot of issues early on. So last year, we started, I had asked Jill to start putting together a guidance document. Because a lot of the problems we were seeing were just on the front end. People weren't designing the studies correctly. They weren't carrying out the front end, which is messing everything else up. Jill got started. Well, we reached out to TWDB and TCEQ. They've been very helpful. They were holding weekly meetings for the first several months. They've been very helpful putting resources together. But primarily, you know, Jill, with the help of staff, have basically compiled all this on their own. I would say when we started this, it was supposed to be a pretty simple guidance document. It's turned into a 300-plus page textbook. That
Eeks.
I'm really proud of these guys for putting it together. It's really thorough. It's really good. And I will just turn it over to Jill to come talk about it. Tap to make sure microphone's on. I didn't even check today.
It's going to be the Cliff Notes version, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Cliff Notes. Pages. Definitely not 300
pages.
No.
Tell me when to switch the slides, Jill.
Perfect. Well, thank y'all so much. We're just going to have a brief overview of essentially what this covers, how it deals with issues that the district was seeing, and then what the next steps are that we're going to be seeing on the project. So, okay, so just to give a brief review for the board, the Senate Bill 2440 went into effect January 1st, 2024, and that was essentially the legislative action that prompted a lot of the cities, counties, municipalities to start looking at groundwater studies and certifications related to subdivisions. So fast forward a couple of months, the Upper Trinity had then secured interlocal agreements with a lot of the counties and cities within our region, essentially offering our technical services to look over these studies on their behalf and then provide non-binding recommendations so that they could go forward and decide on the plat themselves. So as we continued to do that around June 2025, that was when we initiated the discussions about actually having a manual, especially because there were issues outside of our district that while we're primarily focused on the Upper Trinity, other groundwater districts were running into the same issues. People were asking how to do these studies, whether it was appropriate, and the groundwater districts didn't want to be in this spot that said, well, we know you're doing it wrong, but we can't tell you how to do it right. So that's where our discussions kind of happened with this overall document. So we have a compiled draft that was finished essentially in May. We received some feedback that the TCEQ is still in the process of reviewing it. However, the Texas Water Development Board emailed us 2 days ago and told us it was great and to expect comments soon. So we have received a little bit. Yes, sir.
Senate Bill 2440, it wasn't so much they were requiring that as they were saying they can no longer waive them.
There were certain ones, yes, sir. So the may became a shall.
Shall became may.
Yes, sir. And there is still significant discussion about the 10 lots or fewer, as well as the verbiage of credible evidence, which we'll talk about a little later. This document is going to function as a living document. So in the event that the next legislature starts to attack that and decide what credible evidence is or isn't, this document is going to be updated to reflect those changes. So with the help of the 2026 intern team, I'm extremely proud of all the work that they did here. We went and compiled every deficiency that the Upper Trinity found with all of the groundwater studies that they've reviewed since March of 2024. So you can see there's quite a few. The main takeaway from this is that we've seen some issues both with construction and data that's presented. And so the idea was that this manual was going to be data driven and address these issues. So we weren't going to be doing this in a vacuum and then hoping it would be helpful. We wanted it to specifically address what we were seeing in the district. This is my favorite slide. So if you guys can see, we've actually broken down the deficiencies by category. And if you look at the chart in the upper right-hand corner, you can see the story of the deficiencies that were presented to the district. So overall, we started out with documentation issues and misunderstandings of aquifer parameters. But as time went on, we saw an increase in the quality of the wells drilled for the studies. So that was an interesting aspect. So district staff, through educational initiatives, were able to essentially clear that up. And what this district is now seeing is more of issues with the actual test itself, the utilization of the equipment, how the tests are actually being run. So overall, if you guys can see the breakdown, the deficiency pie chart, the major issues that we're running into is impact assessment, which is the actual parameters, the numbers generated about the aquifer, as well as the overall quality, which this manual is going to address. And in case anybody is curious about where these studies are and what the Upper Trinity has covered, that picture right there is the public database that the Upper Trinity hosts on their website. All of the green blocks are groundwater studies that the district has reviewed.
We do not review in Hood County, correct?
No, sir. That's correct.
We don't have an interlocal.
We do not have an interlocal. That's correct. Cool. So just to give a guide work to the actual main component of the manual and how it's framed. There are 11 subsections in Chapter 230, which is the Texas Administrative Code about how to do these studies. So our book is reflecting the beginning to end of a consultant signing up, initiating a study, and then utilizing 230 to actually run their complete study to document submission to the groundwater district and appropriate regulatory agencies. We wanted it to be focused. We didn't want it to wander. We wanted it to be exactly what someone needed for a constant rate aquifer test. And then we also included case studies as well as examples and financial considerations for developers and clients in there as well, because we were seeing that through our review process. Cool. So we'll just briefly run through the chapters. We're not going to get super deep, but essentially chapter one is just an introduction and ethical implications of this. We want to remind people that Texas landowners are going to need to essentially utilize this data to choose where they're going to live and build their homes and communities. And so we want clients and consultants and people that are involved in these studies to understand the legal, ethical ramifications of engaging in a certification. Chapter two is the fun part. That's where you actually start to do all of the background information that you would need on a groundwater study. We call this initial site assessment or the development of your conceptual site model. We don't want people going into these studies having absolutely no information about the aquifer. We want them to do research on the wells nearby. We want them to utilize all of the available state databases, and we essentially provide a roadmap on how to do that, including the utilization of GAMS, the groundwater availability models. There's many consultants that weren't actually aware they existed. So with the work of district staff, we compiled resources on how to actually access those. So that's essentially what Chapter 2 breaks down. Chapter 3 then is looking over the actual form requirements. So like Doug mentioned, there were some initial issues with how people were filling out the documentation, as well as estimating water demand estimates in a reasonable way. That was another one of the issues that staff noted, was coming up with reasonable estimates for people, for different communities, especially with non-residential parts, because that's another thing in 230. They ask for commercial, residential, non-residential, industrial, and they want all of that water demand quantified. So we want to make sure that consultants are aware of what's being asked of them on the form at this point. We also have a really great discussion about existing well utilizations. Based on district staff and their experiences, there hasn't been a really great existing well that's been able to be used in a GAC study. It's just, you just need two wells that are drilled in a scientific way to be really like indicative of the aquifer. So that's essentially what we discuss here. And this cool picture, I just want to get excited about this for a second. District staff were actually able to locate old Railroad Commission documentation related to a contamination plume in Montague County. So through our review process, we were actually able to locate that and determine and assist in the developer. We actually did some water quality testing and confirmed that the water was safe, and it turned out that the remediation efforts were successful. So just highlighting that consultants have the ability to do that if they take a little bit of time to do some research. And then Chapter 4, well design. This is one of the most significant chapters in the book because we highlight the significance of the infrastructure that's required in these studies. So making sure your well design, you're communicating with the driller. You're not just sending the driller out and expecting them to know what to do. You're supposed to work in tandem with them, as well as the drilling methods, geophysical logging, and the required drilling methods to encourage the geophysical logging required in Chapter 230. We also talk about well development, well completion, and then step drawdown testing to make sure if you have a gallons per minute, if you have a pumping rate for your test, it's not going to run that water level all the way down to the pump and burn it out. We want it to be mindful and actually have some logic there. And just to show you guys those two pictures, those are existing water wells that have extensive calcium carbonate buildup on the side. So just showing people, just because you have a hole in the ground on the property doesn't necessarily mean it's appropriate for a study. And then chapter five, aquifer test preparation. This is the one that district staff is going to be putting into a nice handy one-fold sort of trifold documentation. This is what you're supposed to be doing on site before the testing actually occurs. So you have a review of your equipment, making sure you know what you're supposed to be bringing to the field, safety considerations, workspace preparation, data management, having an idea of what's going to be happening before you actually get out there. And we have some district staff that were kind enough to allow themselves to be photographed for the manual.
That's Dawson in the pretty orange shirt.
He wasn't given a choice.
He was not, no. So then we have chapter six, which is the actual aquifer test itself. We essentially walk the consultant through pre-testing procedures. Ideally, they were out at the site several weeks before to compare water level measurements. There might be additional wells nearby. There might actually be development, large trucks moving. All of that impacts their water level data. So we essentially have a really handy checklist for the consultant to look at that. We also then, throughout the entire manual, we're incorporating chapter 230. So we're bringing it back to why is this relevant? It's in the TAC. Then a discussion of water quality sampling and what should be happening on site. We want those water quality samples to be taken at the end of the pumping test, not 2 weeks later, not 2 months later. We really want it to be indicative of the site, so it's helpful for people. And then post-testing procedures, how they're supposed to break down the site, and then have an understanding of what their data is supposed to look like before they decommission any of the equipment measuring water levels. And then finally, this is essentially post-testing, so all of the analysis that needs to be done on the data. So we have a great discussion about corrections and data integrity. The biggest take-home from the manual is the more preparation you do on the front end, the easier it is for you in the analysis section later. You don't have mysterious components in the data where you're not sure what happened. You have an understanding of the quality of your data, and that assists the client and the developer and the groundwater district. It's a win-win-win situation when there's this level of thought put into it. And so we have some examples here of solution methods and where the aquifer parameters, you know, those transmissivity, storativity, those values that tell you how healthy the aquifer is, how those are produced in an appropriate and ethical manner. And then finally, chapter 8, impact assessment. So now that you have all of these values about the aquifer, how are you able to successfully model future situations with pumping? So you guys can kind of see there's some examples here of cones of depression that were previously submitted to the district. There were some consultants that unfortunately estimated that one subdivision impacted 6 different counties from their use. And
just cone of depression.
I believe it was a quarter of a way to the moon, I believe, was one of the numbers that was given to the district. So this manual seeks to provide information and education to provide something that is relevant on these forms. We also have great discussions about well interference and what can happen to a water table, especially when there's a large collection of wells in a small area. What we're also seeing in these studies is people are developing groundwater in more and more locations that had not previously been developed. So the rocks, they're just not what they need to be. There's lots of silt, interbedded sands and clays. It's more difficult to model aquifers and groundwater when you're not sitting there with 100 feet of really thick, nice sand. So we're bringing some clarity to that and how people are supposed to model that in a successful, ethical, and reasonable way. And then chapter 9, one of my personal favorites, this is water quality. So we cover the required constituents in chapter 230. There's 11 of them. But we also give information that the consultant should be mindful of the groundwater quality issues in the area. For example, several public water systems require radionuclide testing based on the groundwater systems. And so we direct consultants to information there that this might be something you should discuss with your client. This might be something that should be considered for testing. And then, of course, we describe all of the required equipment, materials, and practices you would need for responsible water quality testing, as well as making sure that you take your samples from the wellhead and not from an existing well on a house on the property. We want to make sure it's the most diagnostic of the aquifer. And just to provide some pictures here, this is from district equipment, the downhole camera. We discovered a snake in an existing well. So that is a snake skeleton there. So that might impact water quality just a little bit. We also see some bacteria flocculation in the picture on the right. So just a reminder that the better condition the wells are in, the more diagnostic the water quality results are going to be. And then chapter 10, Kyle really focused on this section, but this is about public water supply systems. So chapter 230 has a whole different game plan if it's a PWS and it's not private wells on private lots. So we direct consultants to different sections in the TAC, particularly chapter 290, which is related to public water supply systems. We receive direction from the TCEQ that they don't really have to do the same sort of testing here if it's a public water supply. They don't need an additional observation well. They can use the results of the one single pump test in the PWS. And if they can't develop some of the aquifer parameters like storativity, they don't need to fill in that section of the form. So that was some clarity that we did receive from the state on that particular matter. And then finally, the last section, but probably one of the most significant, is how to submit your data correctly. The Texas Water Development Board had noted that some of the GACs submitted to them When they reached out for additional information from the consultant, like a geophysical log or the pump data, they were told that that was proprietary and they didn't need to share that. So we want to support the Texas Water Development Board in their data repository role by recommending exactly all of the forms and documents you're supposed to submit with a report, including a written report explaining why you did what you did, all of your background data, your metadata. So essentially the state has something that they can utilize in future water planning, as well as having the groundwater district have a quality data set that they can then use for decision makers to make some of those difficult decisions in the future regarding water availability.
I just want to add to that, you know, when this started, we were excited. We thought we were going to get a ton of good data. We were like, man, we're going to make these groundwater models so good. We're going to have so much site-specific data. How many have we totally reviewed now? 60-something. I think maybe we can use the data from 5 of them. So
to this point.
To this point. I mean, 10% of them were good enough that we could actually be able to utilize that data to improve models. So that, I mean, just wanted to add that in of why we kind of, the benefit for districts is, what's the point of doing these if we're not getting good data, right? You're not really giving any assurance to planning authorities, and then the districts and the state aren't getting good data to update our models so that we can have better data for make better decisions based on. So just wanted to throw that in there, Jill.
Yeah, another significant aspect about this is these studies are supposed to be completed regardless of if there's a groundwater conservation district or not. So we've been hearing a lot of discussions at the Capitol about the underrepresented counties like Jack, Clay, any of that, but these studies are supposed to be completed in those areas. So with this manual being complete, it's the hope that some of that data will actually be able to represent some of those communities. So
yeah, that's the goal is we found there are these requirements to do these studies all around the state. I mean, Natalie's told us at the TWDB, they're getting all kinds of just poor quality tests. So we're like, how can we help to get better data? So
that's a great question. So it's a part of the platting process. So when a plat applicant reaches out to a platting authority, a part of the list of things that they're supposed to do, like, you know, floodplain management, you know, design, all of that, this falls under that. So in terms of the platting authority, they have the ultimate decision on the subdivision and its project, but this is a part of that process.
Yeah, this is on the checklist. This is something that has to be submitted to the platting authority for their plat to be considered administratively complete.
That's where she was going back to 2440 by the Senate was before that any county could just waive that requirement. And then part of the reason 2440 was passed was to take that ability to just waive the GAC requirement from the counties.
But I thought if the plat had more than, I thought it was 5 homes. I mean, is there a rule of thumb?
I was about to say, Tracy, you want to?
It's 10 lots.
10 lots.
So here's the thing, and we can add. So the 2440 amended chapters 212 and 232 of the government code. 212 applies to municipalities. The municipalities, 232 applies to the counties, the county commissioner's court. It made this required rather than permissive, right? Historically, it was permissive, and then the counties or the municipalities could waive it. But when 2440 passed, they left a very small window to waive these requirements. Well, if you're on the Gulf Coast or the Carrizo Wilcox, you can waive it. So if you're down closer to Houston, you know, East Texas, you can waive it. But anywhere else for here, you can only waive the study if it's less than 10 lots and credible evidence is provided. Credible evidence that sufficient groundwater exists. But here, and Mike, you might get a kick out of this. No, nowhere else in the code is credible evidence even mentioned.
I don't know what it is.
Nobody knows what credible evidence is. Nobody. It's all the scientists and a lot of folks are like hesitant because what is credible evidence? What type of data can we provide to be credible evidence? This goes back to, you know, one of the commissioners from Wise County and myself went down and testified before TCEQ. Jill went to some meetings trying to be like, we need you guys to define this. I'm just going to be completely honest because it's a public meeting. Texas Home Builders Association showed up and killed that discussion. There was at the official hearing for TCEQ, me, I think Zach testified from another GCD manager, Kevin Burns, commissioner from Wise County, testified, and the only other person people testifying was Texas Home Builders Association. They testified against it, and it just didn't happen. So now we have no definition of, we have no idea what credible evidence means. So
they can't use that alternative.
I mean, they could, but you're putting yourself at risk, right? Because what is credible evidence? What can be considered credible evidence?
Attorney or anyone else who would recommend moving forward that this is credible evidence, they don't really have a leg to stand on.
Right.
Well, in the attorney's mind, you always think of preponderance of the evidence and clear and convincing evidence.
Right.
Those are the two biggies.
Right.
Those aren't the terms they used.
Excuse me?
But those aren't the terms they used.
Yeah, but this shouldn't resonate
right
at all.
Right.
There's no place for it. But right. Anyway,
yeah.
So are you saying then if you wanted to plat something with 9 homes on it?
And you had credible evidence.
And you, whatever that is.
Well, that's the rule, though.
Yeah, but so if you're at 9 homes and some credible evidence, then the GAC study could be waived by the platting authority.
Correct. We have seen that within our jurisdictional boundaries, yes, sir.
I'm sorry?
We've seen that happening in Parker County, yes, sir.
Okay, so, but that's the cop-out, that scenario.
Right.
And there's been times where we've seen where there's a replat. It's a 25-lot subdivision. They're replatting 2 lots to move a property line. And the commissioners waive that because you're not creating a new lot. They're just...
It's pre-existing subdivision.
It's a pre-existing subdivision. And that's something I could support. But there's other situations where they have 9 lots, but someone has to be able to define what credible evidence is. And if the commissioners feel like they're good, they can waive it unless that would require some action from someone saying, well, you didn't have credible evidence. And so far, no one has stepped up and said you were wrong.
The counties and municipalities have taken different stances on that. You know, Wise County's taken a pretty hard stance of, you know, we don't feel comfortable accepting something as credible evidence because we don't know what we can consider, right? What is credible evidence? Parker County has waived a few, right, based on, letters from well drillers or something like that.
For GACs.
Right.
Than they ever have before.
Yes. Yeah. But we're still, like I said, we've reviewed 60-something in the last few years, so 2.5 years.
And this manual, this how-to, which I skimmed through it, and obviously the geeks left me far behind real quickly, has step-by-step. You do step 1, confirm with staff that you're on the right track so you don't mess up your calculation on step 3 and don't find out till step 300. But it will enable better studies and probably, and I'll let Shannon kick me if he wants to, help train the PEs on how to do something that's really outside their wheelhouse.
Right. Yeah.
What they're being asked to do.
The goal, like I said, the goal for this, at least from my perspective, is we want quality data, and we quickly realized that if somebody didn't step up, then we weren't going to get quality data. And it appeared that nobody else was going to step up. So
okay. And even though it's been several years, Kyle and I received a call several weeks back. The TCEQ has started sending people to us because we've become the experts. But there was a gentleman, an engineer out of the Rio Grande Valley, that had not heard of these at all, that was asking for guidance. So there is still a large group of the geoscientist and engineer community in Texas that is not familiar with these. We thought maybe after 1.5 years that would have settled down, but that's not the case. So there's a need more than ever from what we've kind of seen.
Jill, on this, you have forms 2982 and 2983, and those are basically directly from 230, right?
Those are forms constructed by the TCEQ. Yes, sir.
But they're coming out at 230.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And do those forms actually, is it possible for an engineer to fill those forms out and it be completely correct and useless at the same time?
Yes.
I'm glad you asked that. So So it turns out we've had discussions with TCEQ about the quality of what's being submitted on these forms. And what we determined is that some of the verbiage on the form is actually misleading and is not helpful, particularly a section about the aquifers. The form asks you to identify the aquifer that you're planning to test. But because the 230 language does not match the form, there are some consultants that think, oh, I need to list every single aquifer under this property, which is not useful. Right. That's not what we're trying to test here. So we've had discussions with TCEQ and we actually have a list that we're hoping to hear back from them from. They said they were going to implement it, but we've actually proposed significant changes to the 2098-2 form. We've asked for static water levels. We've asked for additional unique IDs related to appraisal districts. So we were told we're going to check back with them, but we were told that those changes were going to be made around the time of the groundwater summit. So we can let the groundwater community know the TCEQ has taken some action for this form to be more useful. So.
But to simply answer, yes. Yeah. You can go through and hit. I mean, look, man.
Fill it out correctly and honestly, and it'd still be completely useless.
Correct. Yep. Correct. And we've seen, I mean, we've seen tests that came back and they looked okay, but it was like almost accidentally got it right. You know what I'm saying? Because the methods on the front end were not correct, but it worked out, right? And I think that's kind of led to some of the issues because there was a couple of ones early on that the design wasn't great, but the test worked out okay. And then they just, that methodology just continued forward. And when the well design wasn't great, the tests kind of went to crap.
So right now we are in a PGMA.
Correct.
So any of the counties or municipalities can issue their own form.
They can.
That can be filled out. And if Upper Trinity was to happen to have a form that was appropriate for GACs, of those communities could adopt that form.
I have been having that conversation with three of my four commissioners' courts. And I believe two of the three have expressed extreme interest. And I think the third has expressed interest as well. My goal is once we get through this, we're going to talk about rules in a little bit, get through that. My goal is then to shift to working on something to help the counties develop their own requirements and standards and forms that we could then work with the counties to basically replace this with something a little bit more thorough, right? Or replace the.
Just the names of those counties?
Yeah. So Parker and Wise County have both been very, very, very excited about this. I've only had small conversations with Monte County about it, but the last time I talked to the judge, he called randomly and we talked about it. He was asking about something else and he seemed interested. And I know they got a new judge coming in as well. Yep. Yep. Yeah. So I think Monte County would also be interested in it as well. I'm still working with Hood County. I would still like to entertain the idea of entering into an interlocal with them and reviewing with them. But they've got some other things going on, but I have been mentioning that to them as well.
The judge to be in Montague has expressed, I think, significant support for the board.
Yep. Yep. My conversations with hers. Yep. Similar.
But right now we could establish our own form.
We could.
And any of those counties or municipalities could say the current form used by Upper Trinity Groundwater Conservation District is the form you have to use.
Right.
They wouldn't have to come up with their own. They could just point to us.
Right.
Assuming we had such a form.
They could.
Do we have such a form?
We do not, but we could put one together. Again, that's what I was saying. Like Shannon, you're actually right online. We've got some stuff that district-wise we need to get through in the next month or so, and then that is the big shift for Jill. Is we're going to start focusing on actually working with those counties to. It wouldn't be just developing forms, but also developing standards, right? Basically, recreating 230 just for them, tightening up a little bit to be a little bit more explicit about what was done. They could even put standards in there, say if you don't meet this, then this is going to happen, kind of thing.
Well, I think working as I do, one of the things we see is very often the county or municipality will say, you're going to use TxDOT standards on this.
Right.
You're going to use the North Central Texas Council government of standards here. Some municipalities are saying you'll use the Fort Worth manual, Fort Worth criteria. You'll use the city of Weatherford criteria.
Right.
That's all very common.
Right.
I think if we had standards and a form like that, and if, say, Parker County was in the middle of rewriting their subdivision criteria manual right now, for instance, if that was going on, they could very easily reference
right.
Upper Trinity standards and forms to have those as what would be required.
Right. Yeah, because Chapter 35 of the Water Code clearly gives them authority to adopt their own water demand requirements or groundwater assessments. And that's, for those of you, Chapter 35 deals with priority groundwater management areas and grants some pretty broad authority to counties within PGMAs, which all four of our counties are in a PGMA. Ready for the next slide, Jill?
Hey, it's a form.
It's a form. So we've also developed a groundwater certification supplemental information checklist. So other groundwater districts, this is what we use in-house to determine if we've received all the necessary information and if it's compatible with 230. We have that included in the manual as well as comparisons to common parameter values. So one of the other discussions that district staff had is whether a transmissivity value was even reasonable for a sandstone or a clay unit here. We have comparisons for consultants so they can make intelligent decisions on the numbers that they put on that form. And we also have a checklist for platting authorities on the powers and abilities actually bestowed to them by Chapter 230. They're allowed to ask for more than what's there. And so we went and outlined all of those. So for anybody that's reading that, they'll have that as a resource.
In any of this, does it have the items that you're asking TCEQ to add to their forms?
So we are holding off on adding those until we have confirmation from the state. And then this last slide is just what we're planning for next steps, engagement and distribution. We want to make sure that this manual is promoted and covered. So we are presenting at the 2026 Texas Groundwater Summit in September. I'll be speaking on the manual there. And then we'll be anticipating what's happening in the 2027 legislative session. If there's any changes there, the document's going to reflect those. And then we're also working on a continuing education credits course for this. Jay and I took a similar course in March, and it looked like essentially it was a three-day course, and they were able to get 24 professional development hours out of it. So we think that we can put something together similarly. And then this is a list of the associations that we're going to be reaching out to, so they're aware of this. We've actually talked with several of them, but promoting this in all the appropriate arenas so everyone understands that it's available.
Yeah, we put this together. I mean, obviously, we've talked about some of the reasons, but we also wanted a resource for all the other counties and municipalities in the state that are getting these studies, and maybe they have a county engineer or engineers on staff in the first cities that there aren't a lot of hydrogeologists in the state. Let's just be honest. They're not. So at least if they had something like this to look through, they would be able to look at some of these studies and have some and be able to review them intelligently.
Glad to answer any other questions.
But also for all of us, I think we're impressed.
And we got some good staff, guys.
It was a group effort. We had a
royal dissertation.
Maybe something like that. It was an excellent group effort. We had a lot of people working on this and continuing with their full-time responsibilities. So we're really impressed that we were able to get this done in essentially a year.
Yep. Yeah. Jill's just, I mean, she's led the charge, but I mean, she's wrangled them all up, but, it's, man, we got some good staff. Like, I don't know that, I know you guys know, but I don't know if you know, right? We have some really good staff.
I received this recommendation. It says for publication. I think we need to copyright it.
Yeah.
Because I think it could be easily copied.
Yeah.
So put that in the, I want, if we do that recommendation, that we will copyright it.
Yeah. No, we'll do anything that we can. Like I said, I've been very, I made sure Jill wasn't sharing this with too many people because of that exact reason. I didn't want a lot of cooks in the kitchen for one thing, but also I know how much effort they've put in and this is theirs, right? People are going to be referencing this thing for years, right? I mean, there's nothing like this out there. Right. In a good way. Right. Right. And so I've told her multiple times, and you know, Kyle's name's going to be on it. Jay's name's going to be on it. Jacob's name's going to be on it. Like, this is something these guys should be proud of. Like, this is a big deal. This is really cool. Like, you could teach an entire college course over this.
I make a motion to authorize the GM to release this document for review and publication with the copyright.
Cool.
I second that.
Motion by Shannon, second by Justin.
Okay. Thank you.
And I want to thank Jill and the staff for the time they've spent on this. We're making a mark.
Yeah, we are making a mark.
Positively.
Yeah. Yeah, we are. Yeah. You know, I think, you know, I sat in a TAG, Texas Alliance Groundwater District meeting this earlier this summer, and I got a little frustrated, and I actually got out and walked out. Because they'd brought in these people from academia, right? Talking about, oh, we got to have, you know, these interns working. I mean, we've got the most extensive intern program in the state as far as groundwater districts, but they're talking about, oh, why you got to do these interns. They've got, you know, professors from, you know, Baylor there. They've got some guys teaching down at UT. They got somebody from out in West Texas. And they're like, and the conversation was like, yeah, groundwater districts just need academia. They don't have any expertise and any real know-how. And they've got to look outside their district to find people to explain how these things work. And I just had to get up and walk out, because I was just like, maybe the other 98 districts do. Maybe the other 98 districts do, but we don't.
Doug, we're an outlier.
We are an outlier.
We're an outlier.
Right.
In a positive way.
Right.
And we've had to be because of the demand on our district. On our-
well, that and, you know, look, about 10 years ago, I said, I don't like the fact that we're having to write a check to get to pick up information and hire these outside professionals. We should have them in house. And we got lucky, right? We got lucky. You know, we had Blaine and Jacob, then Kyle, then Jill, and then Jay. And you know, we're lucky to keep them around. We're lucky to have them here. But I mean, it's kudos to these folks, right? I mean, you know, Jill, the link she goes to educate herself, Jay, I mean, what was it a year and a half ago? Jay was on vacation in Minnesota reading the GAM report. I'm like, I mean, that's the kind of people we have here. And I just want to make sure you guys are aware of that, because the other 98 districts don't have this. They're paying other people outside their district to tell them what to do when we have all the expertise in-house. So I'll leave it at that. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you. Thank the staff.
Guess we could become a consulting firm too.
Make a lot more money doing that, right?
Well, you know, to a certain degree, we are providing services to the municipalities and counties for which we have interlocal agreements, and right. We are providing that expertise to them. So right. We're already doing that, and we can do it outside of our district.
Right.
But having this book gets the possibility to have better data coming in and easier reviews of these GACs, and as this proliferates, other people will be able to do it and do more appropriate data. I mean, that's the problem, is we have a state form that you can come in, you can fill out completely correct, and it is completely worthless.
Right. In most cities, most municipalities, most counties reviewing them would know no different. And, right.
You know, there's very often the position of, well, an engineer sealed it, it must be right.
Right.
Well, nearly half of all engineers are below average.
It's true.
So,
yeah.
We get right for the book.
Item 6, discussion and possible action regarding the development of the Parker County Public Utility Authority. We've been around this quite a bit, and we just really need to step up and belly up to the bar.
Yeah, all I'm really asking you for, guys, here, you know, Friesen Nichols came in and made a presentation to us last month. We're sitting here. They're hoping to start circulating the ordinances for adoption in the next month or so. They've asked for, you know, they've asked by the end of this month to let them know, yes, we're going to do this, or no, we're not. That way they can prepare the ordinances accordingly, right? Because you got to include all the entities in the ordinance. You know, we've gone back and forth. We've talked about it. I think it's the single most important thing that we can do, the collective we, to conserve groundwater is bringing additional water into the county to offset the demand for groundwater. And I think it's important that we're part of it. That Parker County wants us to be part of it. You know, that group wants us to be part of it. So my recommendation is to just basically let me know that I can go tell them, yes, we're good. We want to be part of this.
Where do we fall on the money?
As you can see on this right now, because they're basing everything on population, but we don't have a population served, right?
They just have that's
yep, down at the bottom, at 25K per year. So
we're less than the city of Weatherford.
Yes.
But more than Hudson Oaks.
Yes.
So that's a per year amount of money that we would have to budget for moving forward.
Yes.
So if you join now, when's first payment due?
Probably next year.
Okay. So we're looking at a Jan 1 start date.
Right.
Per se.
Next budget year.
That's something like that.
Yeah,
I mean, I get it. It's our county, my county, the one I'm from. But you're not there. That's going to be an issue.
Yeah,
I make a motion to commit to joining the PUA and the proposed contribution of $25,000 a year and in kind services.
I second that.
Motion by Shannon, second by Justin. I will point out the board has expressed our concerns on Doug taxing himself. And Doug has said we have a hold of his reins and can take care of that if we see that happening.
Yep.
But at the same time, Doug's also let us know he has an amazing staff and he's put himself in a position that he can take on this additional work serving both the district and the PUA.
And he's also shown us that he's able to delegate too.
Yep. I'm getting a little bit better at it. There could be some improvement.
Well, yes. Talk. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Management report, Doug, anything particular?
Yes. I mentioned July earlier. So you guys can, if this is a horrible idea, you blame Brian. He put it in my ear. But every year, so we struggled this morning. I was there for about a 30-minute period, I thought, and I called Tracy, and I thought we were going to have to cancel the meeting tonight. It's about every July this is the case. July is when people who have families tend to go on vacation. Well, it's when I go on vacation. I'm going to go on vacation not next week, but the following week. Brian put it in my ear that one of his other groundwater district's clients just took action to say we're not going to have July meetings anymore. I don't need any action right now. But if you just give me some direction, I would like y'all to consider just moving forward with 11 meetings a year, giving us July to let staff vacation.
So no double down in August.
Say what?
We wouldn't double down in August.
No. Okay. No, we would just go down to 11 meetings a year.
Okay.
It might extend the meeting at that August meeting maybe a little bit longer.
We could have two in December to make up.
But just something for consideration. Typically, Justin, I bring recommended board dates for adoption to the board in November. So if y'all I just want to put that in y'all's ear, let y'all think about it between now and the fall when I start putting together our schedule for next year.
I would imagine if Ann went back and looked, we've had more bare quorums for July than any other months of the year.
That's correct.
It has been complicated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I really don't have a problem with doing that.
You know, I think you knock it down one a year. It's not the end of the world, right?
Yeah.
So just want to put that in y'all's ear. Don't think there was anything on this else we needed to talk about.
Mm-hmm. One thing on education outreach. Don't you have a grant to announce?
Oh yeah. You want to talk about it, Joe? Talk about it.
I mean, I'm getting a press release.
Sure. No, you're good.
Report.
You're good.
So the Texas Water Development Board had their first ever groundwater district science grant program. So essentially any of the groundwater districts could apply. There were two different categories of the grant. So equipment and science and education. And the Upper Trinity proposed the drilling of monitoring and exploratory wells in Hood County. There's been a site that the district has purchased for several
years. Given to us.
And there is an existing public water supply well there. So the district proposed to take care of that well and then drill some observation wells. Essentially, the district would be able to collect data, instantaneous data through transducers. We'd be able to do step drawdown testing, lithologic analysis, and overall it would benefit the understanding of the Trinity Aquifer in Hood County. And we were one of four districts to receive the full $300,000 that we requested. So,
and you know how many of the other districts had to hire outside consultants for their work?
The other three.
Yep. All of them?
Every other awardee, right?
Yeah.
But we're doing everything in-house. It is a property several years ago, about 10 years ago,
yeah.
2016, 2017, formerly Southwest Water. They were going to plug and abandon a well. They didn't want that site anymore. They just deeded us the little 75 by 75 square where this well is for us to have as a monitor well. And we are going to plug that, remove some of the equipment that's there on site, and then we'll drill two more monitoring wells. We actually, part of the grant, not just is going to cover the two wells, but it's also going to, we're going to get some new equipment. What is it, caliper log or?
Yeah, caliper log, sonic logger. It's going to help us understand cement bonding within some of these wells, which is a major issue for the district. So
we're going to be able to do cement bond logs now. Part of the grant, we're going to buy a new tool for the logging rig. So that's going to help us do a little bit better characterization.
See, I do watch your, I do read your press release.
You do.
Yeah. So I'm real happy about that. Jill helped put that together.
In her spare time.
Yeah, in her spare time. And I just let them know today that the scope of work looked good. They'll be sending that contract. Of course, y'all authorized me to submit it and then execute the agreement a while back. So once we get that, we'll execute that agreement and then we'll start work.
And one of the significant aspects of it is this grant was initially supposed to be slated to be $3.5 million in the first grant year and then $3.5 million in the second. And because the Texas Water Development Board saw the quantity of grants that were submitted, they decided this year to use the full $7 million on this. So I think there's hope that the legislature in this next session, seeing that it was spent in a responsible manner, might be interested in making this more of a regular thing.
Yeah, that's the goal. We've had several discussions. This week is the first week in, I don't know, since like May that I haven't been in Austin or at a conference. So I've spent a lot of time down there. There's a lot of legislative discussion. And I think this is something we're going to look for being a recurring biennial appropriation to the Water Development Board. So hopefully we can start getting some more money to help with some of the stuff we're doing. You know, I've been in contact with Wade. I'm going to have an item on y'all's agenda next month for some modeling that I'd like to, you guys can consider us funding. So things like that, it's to help us. So we're not constantly pulling out of our savings to do this stuff. So
we love grants. Definitely.
Grants are great.
Anything else on management report?
No.
Item 8, review line item expenditures and adopt budget amendments as necessary. Doug?
Yes, sir. We just have one budget amendment. We had to add an extra cubicle up here in the front for the interns. So I'm just asking to move $600 from office equipment to office furniture.
Doug, what's the difference in the definition of equipment and furniture?
I don't know. You guys tell me. You're the ones that adopt the budget.
That's a question I have too.
It was given to us by our general manager.
You are correct. Typically, equipment is going to be, you know, printer, actual equipment. Furniture is chairs, cubicles, stuff like that. Yeah. Just to be completely clear, we have an office manager just walked out. She's everything dotted, I dotted, T crossed. She would not enjoy putting furniture and office equipment. So we're just moving the money to the office furniture line item.
I make a motion that we
do the budget amendment.
Adopt the budget amendment.
I'll second it.
Second by Director Micah. Any further discussion? Motion carries. Item 9, discuss and consider possible action to authorize the general manager to publish proposed amendments to the district rules and schedule a rulemaking hearing. At this point, I'm going to take us into executive session under Section 551.071, consultation with legal counsel. No action will be taken in this session. Everybody can stay here. We're going to the other room. We'll come back in open session and take action at that point.